Hey, welcome back everyone to the Electric Podcast. As usual, Fred, your host here, coming in from Montreal, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred. How's the weather?
Yeah, awful as usual. No surprise here. So this week we're going to have another big week. That's not a surprise to everyone that's been following Electric this week with the Tesla earnings. So we're going to do just a quick review of the earnings, the actual financial point, and then move on to what came out of the conference call and what we interpret from it, and what followed the call right after too, that pissed off a lot of people in the Tesla world because of the apparent delays that a lot of Model 3 reservation holders are going to experience from the updated timelines, and also the changes that occurred with Tesla seems to have shifted their focus on the higher margin option, and the standard battery pack is going to be delayed quite significantly.
Not a popular choice.
No. Not if we look at the feedback on the website.
Not popular.
600 comments on that article, and we didn't count all of them, but I'm pretty sure the vast majority are not happy people. But let's just go back to the earnings themselves. We're talking about, for the bottom line items, it's nothing surprising. Record revenue because of record deliveries, of course, for both Model S and X, and also the start of Model 3 deliveries. So $3.3 billion in revenue. Also, it comes with the biggest loss, on per share of $3 per share for non-GAAP accounting, and for if you go with the traditional accounting.
So did we really expect that big of a loss, or is that kind of surprising?
The Wall Street expectation was at 319, and it came in at 34. So it's actually not as big as a loss that people were expecting, but it's still a huge loss. But if you look at the actual cash flow, that also wasn't as bad as people were expecting. The cash balance is still very good at $3.3 billion. So people were expecting a bigger difference with Q4. But it looks like most of Tesla's capital expenditure for the Model 3 expansion was in Q3. So the capital capex wasn't as big as people expected in Q4. And with the also slightly higher revenue, that compensated. What was way down though was the gross margin on vehicles, but Tesla attributed that to Model 3 margins that affected the whole balance for the rest of the vehicles. So Model S and X, we knew last year we were used to seeing them in the 20s, 20% gross margin. That went down way below that this quarter, but that's because Tesla right now has an operation that is supposed to support 5,000 Model 3 per week of manufacturing, and apparently the only manufacturing about 1,000 per week. So that creates a very bad gross margin, and it's weighing in on the entire lineup right now.
So did we really get any? Clearly Tesla's not making as many cars as we had expected, or they had expected. Did we get any indication what specifically was causing the problem, and how Tesla was going to fix it, or is it kind of just vague at this point?
Yeah, well, that was mostly addressed during the conference call that followed the earnings. So in the earnings itself and in the conference call, they reiterated their same goals that they had last time. So that when I'm talking last time, so the last time that the actual production ramp up was delayed was back in January, first week in January, when they unveiled the delivery numbers and the production numbers for the four quarters. So that's when they pushed the 5,000 per week deadline to Q2, to the end of Q2. And end of March for 2,500 per week. So they maintained the actual production ramp up goals with their earnings this week. And they did give an update during the conference call about what are the bottlenecks right now. And it comes back again to the battery module production. The big piece of equipment is missing. They designed a whole new line, an automated production line for. That's based on what Elon and JB said, JB Serbo, the CTO, and Elon Musk, CEO. And that line is currently in Germany and apparently is working fine, but now they need to move it to the Gigafactory one in Nevada. So as long as that line doesn't move and become active and in operational in Nevada, which they expect to do before the end of March, that's how they're going to get to 2,500 a week by the end of March. In the meantime, they are working on two automated lines that are apparently not working well because of they are blaming it on the supplier. And they have what they call a semi-automated line, which is operated by a lot of workers too. And they said that that line itself is working fine. So that's what they're using right now mainly to get cars out. But it's nowhere near, it needs to be in order to get to 2,500 and 5,000 a week.
Right. So this will kind of segue into the next area, but it's a question that we've just kind of discussed offhandedly is, you know, if Tesla's having such a hard time making batteries and making the actual cells for the car, why not just sell the $35,000 one, and which requires about 2/3 the amounts of cells, and they could sell...
Well, the cells are not the actual problem. That's what my understanding is.
It's the pack.
Cells made by Panasonic is not the real problem. It's getting them into modules that you can put in a battery pack, the problem. So, and like I said last time, both standard battery pack and long-range battery pack actually have the same number of modules. They just don't have the same number of cells per module. So that, to your point, still affect the productivity of making the module themselves. But I don't think it's going to have that big of an impact just putting less, fewer cells per modules. So, but yeah, to do the segue, yeah, that was the big news. So Tesla released their earnings after market close. Then there was the conference call where Elon pretty much reassured the analysts and people listening that Model 3 production is still on track. Though they're still like opening the door to potential delay, but technically it's still on track if everything goes fine with that new production line. But right after that, Tesla started sending out emails. And if you just go to your Tesla account and your Model 3 reservation order, you can see an updated timeline for depending what you delivery window, I should say, for depending on your configuration that you prefer. So long range battery pack with premium interior. So that's the soonest that you can get. That's what in production right now. So they're calling that first production. Standard battery pack and the all-wheel drive. So what we're seeing for most people, if you're in the US, so the first production delivery window was updated just to reflect the fact that a lot of them were already outdated from the previous delay that happened in January. So that's not a surprise that happened as usual. But then what happened next was that your delivery window for the standard battery pack was pushed to late 2018 for people in the U.S., for most people in the U.S. So it still depends on a few priority criteria, like if you're an owner or not, of course, and where you're located and everything. But if you were waiting for the standard battery pack, it looks like you could have added 3 to 6 months delay in the U.S., That's even worse for people outside of the U.S. So European markets got early 2019 for most of them that I've seen from reports. Same thing from Canada. But what was pushed forward was the if you're ready to go first production in Canada, so long range with premium interior, then you moved up from late 2018 to mid 2018. So it looks like Tesla is really pushing for more first production model, which are, of course, higher margins vehicles. But the take rate in the U.S. is probably not high enough to just gobble up all the production that they plan to be doing by the end of the quarter, and then the 5,000 a week by the end of the second quarter. So it looks like they are planning to open up ordering in Canada to be able to ship some of those long-range car. And the all-wheel drive also is getting mid 2018 for both the U.S. and Canada. So that's going to change the plans of a lot of people, I think. I think your plans changed too.
Right. So, update from my situation. I have two reservations. I was hoping to get the first production one in January. It was scheduled for January. It didn't show up. I went to a Tesla dealer last week. They said March, maybe. Don't know. So that would be 2 months later than the pushback. And at this point, we've already seen in the California DMV the all-wheel drive models coming. So at that point, I was like, you know what? Those all-wheel drive things are coming. That's the one I really want anyway. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I don't even know if I need the 310 mile. I could probably deal with 220, though I don't know if those are actually going to come out. But I would much rather wait a few months. And then, I mean, it's not like I'm going to be the first one in New York to get one or the first one. You know, we've already reviewed it. So at this point, there's no real point in getting one. You know, it'd clearly be fun to have and nice to have. But, you know, there's still snow on the ground for another 2 months. That a rear-wheel drive car is not fantastic to have right now anyway. So I killed it. But the good news is I still have two reservations. So what I'm probably going to do is get the all-wheel drive when that comes out. And my you know, earliest one is mid-2018. And then at some point later, I'll get a standard battery one. So,
yeah, because that's the other thing, too. Right now, it looks like the all-wheel drive for mid-2018 is both for long range or the standard 220 battery. But we think that's like that's a mistake. Like, it didn't transfer from the updated delivery windows, because it doesn't make sense if you go from a production complexity standpoint. Doesn't make sense, and for the order margin too, because it makes sense a little on that point. But if Tesla is still looking to have the highest margin possible, we're gonna combine the all-wheel drive with the long-range battery pack. That's what I'm thinking. So
yeah, I mean, it does make sense, but you know, maybe Tesla, because they have a premium on the all-wheel drive ones, maybe they can sell those and make a profit somehow, or maybe the all-wheel drive ones will come in at, you know, only on the premium models or something, some way to make a lot more money on those.
Yeah, there's still also no mention on the premium interior when it's going away. Within those delivery windows are there set up right now. But yeah, if we take the pulse of the Tesla community after those changes, it was very poorly received.
Super pissed would be a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's to say the least. And like Tesla said, just in the shareholders letters to when the earnings came out, the fact that they didn't mention the fact that the Model 3 is delayed, but the fact that they're putting the Model 3's display cars in the showrooms, that's bringing a lot of foot traffic from Model 3 reservation holder and everything. And they were talking about fear of cannibalization between Model 3 and Model S, and they also mentioned Model X for some reason, which I don't understand any risk of cannibalization between those two. But anyway, and they say that now they're seeing Model S and X order increase. And they are attributing that to people getting in the showroom. But I think the biggest factor is, of course, they're getting to the showroom, then they're looking at their delivery window and they say, I'm not going to get that car anytime soon. And then they can more easily try to convince people to go with the Model S and X. But I think, yeah, that's really just crushed the idea of cannibalization, I think. Because that was something that you were afraid of for a while. You were thinking
I don't know that you can say that the cannibalization won't happen, because you can't get a Model 3 right now. Like,
yeah,
you right now, if you order one, you'd be lucky to get one in 2019. I mean, if you order a decked out one, for sure. But you know, like, if both were available in the same showroom at the same time, and you could order one and have one in a week or,
yeah,
you know, a couple of days, then I think there will be real cannibalization. But yeah, Now there's no cannibalization because there's no way to get a Model 3. In fact, the only reason they're even putting them in the showrooms is to get people in the door so that Tesla can theoretically sell them a Model S or X and while they're added some solar panels and a battery.
Yeah, they were saying too that that it affects Tesla Energy product orders too significantly. But yeah, and I think that won't happen. Like when you say that you can get the car on the same timeline and they're both in the showrooms, I don't think that will happen. I think when that happen, that will happen. The Model S will see a significant upgrade too before the Model 3 does. So I think the timing's gonna work just fine. Well, Tesla's gonna make the timing work for them, I think, on that front.
It's hard to be patient though. Like I know, like it's just so frustrating because, you know, you see those cars, some people are getting deliveries and you're like, why doesn't Tesla just make more, just make, you know, put out another line, put another four lines. But the problem is they're not cheap to make right now. They're not making $35,000 cars. They're making, you know, $60,000 cars, and they're not making a lot of them. So it's not a good situation. And that kind of segues into our next topic of the stock price, which you know, the whole market's obviously in correction zone, but Tesla is particularly had a bad day. The Model 3's launch window changed. What are our prospects long term? I mean, is it a buying opportunity, or do you think this is kind of a long-term trend?
A lot of people didn't believe that the stock would ever go below 300 again. Yep. So for those people, not much change really. So for those people, yeah, it's definitely a buying opportunity, I think. But yeah, so the most disappointing thing that came out of the whole situation this week is that Tesla will not reach its promised $35,000 price point for at least a full year after production officially started back in July 2017. So from now on, I don't think we see a standard battery pack until at least past July. So they said late 2018. So for me, late 2018, it's like Q4 or end of Q3 or something like that. So yeah, so that's worrying because that was the big point that the shorts were counting on, that Tesla cannot build a $35,000 car. So I don't think it means that. I don't think it means that Tesla can't build it, but it certainly means that he can build it now.
Right.
That's for sure. That doesn't mean that he can build it a year from now or eight months or something from now. But yeah, it is worrying to a degree, I think.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, Chevy was building at the end of 2016.
Yeah, but Chevy was losing money on it.
Yeah, they were losing 9,000 per. But you know, even then, they were putting out a bunch of Bolts, and I think they plan to make a profit on Bolts. I don't know how compliancy they are. They're certainly not turning down the ZEV credits get from Bolts. But
but to be fair, we should mention too that Tesla sold a bunch of ZEV credits last quarter. Like I think 119 million, I think, last quarter alone. So it was a big quarter for ZEV credit.
Right. So
it's not like Tesla is putting up its nose on the credit either.
Right.
But yeah. So people are happy in Shortville right now for Tesla, and it's making a few people that we dislike, not really dislike it. Having a smirk at the moment, but yeah, like you mentioned too, it came a very worst week for Tesla since there was a huge market correction at the same time. So it's not exactly clear where Tesla is specifically affected. It certainly was specifically affected this week. So we saw right after the earnings, the stock was up like 2% in the after hours. So that was just based on the shareholders' letter. It was, of course, like specifically crafted for making shareholders happy. That's how it works. But the actual numbers were pretty good too, at least based on Wall Street expectation at that point. But then in the morning, things changed completely. Tesla was down like 6% the first few hours of trading. And that can largely be attributed, in my opinion, with the change in delivery windows. But in the shareholders' letter, they also mentioned that they were going to change their strategy a little for the Model 3 rollout to focus on higher margin configuration. So it wasn't like exactly a big surprise or anything when that happened a few hours later. But yeah, it took a few owners by surprise, I think.
Yeah, and today the stock, you know, against the broader market decline, went below 300 for the first time in quite a while. So, you know, some people may see it as a buying opportunity. I think it's closing, or it closed at 310, which is still a pretty good buy if you're long on Tesla.
Oh, it went back up to 310?
Yep.
In the last few hours of trading?
Yeah, there was a little bump at the end of the day. But, and you know, I think the Dow was actually up on the day. Tesla was down 1.5%.
It went back up. So it went into the upswing of the market after it went down. Other interesting thing that came out with the earnings this week, Model Y, we got sort of an update on a better timeline, some color on the Model Y.
Yeah, so, we'll have an announcement this year, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, so you talked about an announcement about the production plan for it, but I would assume that with the production plan, we're going to actually see the car, so it's going to be like a big event as usual for Tesla unveiling, then Elon Musk going to sneak in a special production plan with unveiling, something like that. He was talking about the 3 to 6 months window for that event. But for the actual production of the Model Y, so as you know, like, you know, over the last year or so, Elon talked about a few different plans for the Model Y, which originally was supposed to be just a crossover or a compact SUV based on the Model 3 platform. So like the Model X was based on the Model S, the Model Y would be based on the Model 3, something pretty simple like that. Then he talked about making it on a whole new platform instead, with significant improvement in the architectures, making it reducing the wiring harness to a strict minimum, which should normally, if you have less wiring harness, you can improve automation in the production process. But when he said that, like a few months later, he came back on that and said that his executive team talked him out of it and said that it's better to take advantage of like the popularity of the Model 3 and quickly put something on the market. And now it's sort of like a hybrid of both plans, I think, in my opinion. What he says is that capital expenditures will start as soon as this year for the production of the Model Y. So capital expenditure, normally like when you're developing a new car program for the prototypes and just building a few prototypes, it's not a big investment. So capital expenditure inside of a EV program starts when you green light the vehicle for production and you start investing in tooling and stuff like that. So he said that will start late in 2018. So if you look at something similar as the Model 3 production plan, it sounds like they are aiming to bring that car to market like something like late 2019, early 2020, something like that. But we're going to get a good idea of that in 3 to 6 months with an event. And it sounded like it will include the location to the production at that point. So I don't know what you think about that. You didn't listen to Carl, you said, but the way he talks that, he said that there's going to be a location included in that plan. The way he made it sound, it's like it's going to be a new location. Like it could have just meant like we're going to build the Model Y at the Gigafactory or at Fremont or whatever. But the way he said it, it opened the door at least for the possibility of announcing a new factory altogether.
That would be interesting for sure. You know, Fremont's obviously starting to fill up, and the Gigafactory is going to be where the semi is produced, and it's also where the drive modules are for the Model 3 are made.
Drive unit, yeah.
Yeah, drive unit. So, I think Elon had kind of teased the possibility of a factory in kind of the Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio area at one point.
Yeah, I did.
That could be a possibility, or, you know, people... There's a lot of BMW, a lot of non-US based car companies make cars for the US in the South, like South Carolina, Alabama,
Tennessee.
Tennessee. You know, obviously there's that big Nissan Leaf factory down in Tennessee. So there's a lot of options there. The thing about Fremont that I think is troubling to Tesla is that it's hard to get line workers there because you have to pay Bay Area pricing for, you know, like people have to live, they have to eat, they have to, you know, pay rent, and everything's pretty high there. But if you go into the middle of South Carolina or Georgia or Tennessee, housing prices are a lot lower, cost of living's a lot lower, and you can get, you know, middle class folks, you know, line type of workers for, you know, relatively inexpensive price, and also energy is a lot less expensive. Theoretically, you know, Tesla is going to be getting energy from the sun at some point at the Gigafactory, and hopefully. And yeah, so maybe that doesn't matter as much, but you know, there's a lot of parts of the equation. But we do know that Fremont is full. Like, there's just nowhere to park. There's nowhere, like, it just seems like the place is jam-packed. The Gigafactory is obviously starting to fill up with the semi-production there. With
the semi-production is not confirmed yet. That's more of a rumor, I think.
Okay. But in any case, it makes a lot of sense to start a new... They have to start some new factories. They have to... I think they were talking about one in China, another one in Europe. Yeah, you can't just make all the cars in one factory.
Yeah, but to your point though, the way he's talking about the next generation factory that they want to build for Model Y is that it's going to be a lot more automation, so a lot fewer line workers. Fewer like production associates and people that have more manual labor role, so it's going to be mostly staffed with engineers. That's what I'm thinking. If you like robot operator, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're building the machines to build the machines, kind of thing. Yeah, once those automated lines come online.
Yeah, Elon during the call again reiterated that long-term Tesla's product will be the factory and not the car themselves. They're going to focus on having the most efficient, best manufacturing product. He got pushed a little bit on that point at some point during the call. I think it was the analyst from Barclays, Brian Johnson, but I might be mistaken. He started pushing, like, he started implying that Elon stole the machine that built the machine phrase from a Toyota book about manufacturing, and he started like challenging his idea of Toyota's lean manufacturing philosophy, and trying to make Elon articulate the difference between what his vision of manufacturing versus Tesla, not Tesla's, Toyota's lean manufacturing. And Elon was weird about it. Well, I think he was like taken back by being challenged on the issue, but he didn't offer a clear answer on that.
That's interesting. Well, yeah. It'll be interesting to see if that analyst is on the next call.
I'm pretty sure it will be. Barclays is a big enough firm for that. I think it works more like that than anything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're still excited about probably seeing the Model Y in the next few months or so, at least by the end of the year, hopefully. And it's going to hit the market pretty quickly.
You think so? I would hope it would hit the market pretty quickly, but it doesn't seem like, you know, Tesla's got to work through the backlog of Model 3 orders. I wonder if announcing something, you know, mid this year or mid to late this year would cause people to take out their Model 3 orders and wait a little bit longer for a Model Y.
Well, I think the market is just so huge that they don't care that much, even if they just end up transferring a few, even 100,000 Model 3 deposit to Model Y deposit. I don't think they care that much. I think the biggest thing is that Model Y is going to have competition, supposedly 2019-2022. So Tesla is going to want an entry in that segment, that like compact SUV crossover segment, at some point soon. And Elon seemed also pretty excited about like the understood the manufacturing issue that they have with the Model 3 right now. So he probably sees a lot of opportunity right now to like launch a vehicle program, a vehicle manufacturing program without the Model 3, that the mistake that they made with the Model 3. So I think that's like exciting for Tesla's manufacturing division right now.
Yeah.
You want to fix those mistakes as soon as possible.
And what do you think about the possibility that they talk about the pickup truck?
Yeah, like I said a long time, I think they should unveil that thing as soon as possible. Like if they have a design or something, they give them a rough prototype. And just even if they don't plan to manufacturing like until 2020 or something like that, which seems to be the plan at this point, just do like the Model 3 and start taking reservations and something like that, just to show the demand for an all-electric pickup truck that is well-designed and has impressive specs. And for sure they can do it with just what they showed with the Tesla Semi and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you really want to scare Ford and Chevy.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Building. Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, if you get 100,000 reservation in a week like they did for the Model 3, but for pickup trucks, Ford is going to have to green light the program almost instantly instead of sitting on that 2020 Ford F-150 with a hybrid powertrain. Not even a plug-in hybrid, just a hybrid powertrain. That's what they have in plan right now. Officially, that's what they're talking about. So you need to, if Tesla's mission is to accelerate the advent of electric transport, that would be the move to do. But I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
Really? I mean, the Model Y theoretically could just be, you know, a take on that if you're talking about a small pickup truck.
Well, unless they pulled like a Tesla Semi event, that would be nice. Like
that would be nice.
They pull a Tesla Semi event and
like here's the Model Y and one more thing. You take off the back of the Model Y, you have a pickup.
Maybe the other way around, but
right.
But yeah, that's the idea. Speaking of crazy thing, I think what captured the news for Tesla this week, even though the earnings with this week was the big launch of the Falcon AV.
I think I did hear something about that.
Yeah, it was all over the place. I don't think we have much to say about it. It was absolutely insane and crazy thing to watch. Great publicity stunt too for Tesla, even though it's not like a car commercial or anything. It's a original Roadster that it's not for sale anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of hybrid of, you know, you have to throw something up there to test carrying the weight, so you might as well make it something cool. But it's also like a performance art. I mean, watching those two rockets come down.
It came out today that that Elon reached out to NASA and the Air Force if they wanted to risk having a payload of their own on the Falcon Heavy demonstration flight, and they both refused to. So that's when Elon was sure that he's gonna have to have a dummy payload on that thing, he went with the Roadster, and it turned out to be just a crazy great idea, because it was gonna happen anyway. So that's not the event. The Roadster in space is not the event. The launch of the Falcon Heavy was the main event, because that was SpaceX product. They were trying to show that it works, but Elon just found a way to combine that with Tesla and just make the event better for both companies ultimately, because it was also great for SpaceX that the Roadster was there. It bolstered up more publicity too.
Yeah, I mean, and they did a really good job producing it as well, which, like, you know, like Elon said, if they can put a Roadster in space, they can probably fix the Model 3 production issues.
That was a good quote.
But too. I mean, they did, you know, they got good camera views. They got the little space guy in the driver's seat, like with the right... Like, it's pretty cool. They did it right, and they did it well.
Some people suspect that's a murder, like that Elon just put someone in that suit and shut it up in space for the perfect murder.
There's nobody. I haven't seen that one short guy in a while. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, he's pretty tall. If you look like he's over the windshield and you're pretty much just sitting flat on that thing.
No, I mean the Tesla short guy, the Seagull or
whatever. Oh, okay, you mean the short. Okay, yeah. That was a crazy thing too about the launch. So it happened the day before the earnings, and a bunch of shorts claimed that it was planned that way, like to have the big launch to overshadow the earnings that were going to be bad anyway. And that's the stupidest thing ever. Like that's when I hear shorts saying things like that, and I know, okay, you're not seeing the whole picture. You're too like tunnel vision into that short mentality, because first of all, the Falcon Heavy program was delays a bunch of time, was supposed to happen like 3 years ago, and they tried to cancel it and they kept pushing it. And also, like, you don't have a delivery window like whenever you want. They've been trying to launch, I think it's been in Cape Canaveral for like 2 months, trying to test it to get a delivery, a launch window to shoot in space. And it just happened that it was this week and a day before the earnings. It could have been the same day. There's been SpaceX launches on the same days of the earnings too. It's not.
Well, you know what was kind of cool though is it is the 10-year anniversary of the launch of the
that worked out fine.
The model, the Roadster.
Yeah.
So 10 years after the first Roadster was delivered, the first Roadster was delivered to space.
Yeah.
That's a productive decade.
Elon got the very first Roadster, but I don't think that's the very first one. That's Elon's Roadster 2, but that's not the very first Roadster, I think.
I feel like Elon probably got an upgrade somewhere along the way.
And that's the upgrade, I think. I think he kept the VIN number 1, because he got the VIN number 1 for the Roadster. Or at least, if he didn't get the VIN number 1, he get the first delivered one, whatever. But I think that's like a 2.0 or 2.5 Roadster. And
what do you think they do with the prototypes? Do you think they destroy them?
There's one at the Fremont factory. Like, if you,
I would love to get my hands on the Model S prototype with that smooth front end.
Oh yeah, I think that's there too. Yeah, I think at the Fremont factory they have a lineup of all the prototypes vehicles from Roadster to I wasn't there when I went there. The Model 3 wasn't there, but to Model X. So. And yeah, you're right. The Model S prototype is quite cool. It's probably the one that is most different from the production car.
Right, they changed it the most.
Yeah. Well, the Model X there was a few prototypes too that were.
The Model X prototype had like the front of the Model S. They really didn't do much work. They're like the interior, just a little bit taller.
But they changed a lot of the interior too. Like they had a different steering wheel. The center console too was. Sticking out of the dash, more like the Model 3 screen than the Model S and X screen in the production version right now. But yeah, that was a crazy event for sure. One thing that we didn't talk about, because it happened actually just right after the last podcast, it happened the last weekend, was the announcement that Tesla is installing 50,000 Powerwalls in Australia, in South Australia, actually.
Yeah, Australia is turning into a pretty good test bed for Tesla energy products. This is actually pretty cool because, like, each house gets a backup, you know, that has a backup power for when the power does go out. But it also creates a virtual battery for the whole grid. And I forget the size. It was like gigawatt hours, right? Or 650 megawatt hours of energy storage capacity distributed.
250 megawatt of generation to 250 megawatt of generation, 650 megawatt hour of energy capacity.
That's pretty cool. Like, I think that's the future. Like, that model's the future. Like, everybody's got their own solar panels. Everybody's got their own batteries. So, you know, a truck runs into your power lines, you flip on the switch and you're off grid. But, you know, when the grid needs it and the smart grid needs it, all the batteries can put energy back into it.
Yeah. And of course they're deploying it because they are deploying it in a massive fashion. Like it's that's the same place that they have the big power pack system to the 129 megawatt hour power pack system. So that's all in all, it's a much bigger than the what is currently the biggest the world's largest lithium ion battery system in the world. But now they are putting it in a distributed way instead. So they are calling it the virtual power plant system, since they can all go use the power and the energy capacity of those battery pack to level with the grid. And basically, they learn a lot from the power pack system that is installed in South Australia. And they're seeing just how valuable that is for just for the whole grid there. And we're talking about a few weeks back, we reported on the battery system on its own making over $1 million just by playing with the prices, the energy prices there. But we this week, what we reported on too is that it actually also reduced millions of dollars of cost that was going to the peaker plant. So the fossil fuel companies that are operating the peaker plant there to adjust the frequency of the grid when there's a loss, those plants are can make like the report for Renew Economy was saying that it was making $7 million on some of the worst day that they need to change the frequency of the network, and Tesla just replaced that altogether for a day on January 14th. Instead of the prices going to where they will normally go, which is 14,000 Australian dollars per megawatt hour, they were limited to 270 megawatt dollar per megawatt hours. So we're talking about a huge difference here in pricing, which just if it goes like that just for an hour, like the money that you save is incredible.
Yeah, and we probably should explain the peaker plants. The peaker plants are just the little fossil fuel, usually coal or gas, power plants that don't come on unless there's a brownout, about to happen or happening. And they are extremely inefficient. They're not huge, but they're needed because the main power plants can't carry the load. So they're kind of distributed, but they're not. They don't have the efficiencies of scale of the regular big power plants. So, and what's bad for the power companies is that these peaker plants can kind of charge whatever they want because not whatever they want, but they can charge a lot because they're so needed. And to keep just to have this thing online. Not necessarily running, but just online all year long is a very expensive proposition. So that's why these batteries are becoming a really big deal, especially in places like South Australia, which has these various energy needs and has had like major brownouts in the past.
Yeah, and what's interesting too here is that so. Right now, who's profiting the most from the power pack system in South Australia is actually the operator of the system, which is Neoen, the guys that own the wind farm that adjacent to the power pack system. But now they're putting those power walls and solar arrays on the rooftop too, and they are focusing on low income residential residents. So that's gonna be great.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. I think 1,100 housing trust properties, and they've already started installations on them.
Yeah, so they're focusing on those first, like you said, 11,000, and that's going to be the focus for because the installation are going. So 50,000 is not going to happen overnight, of course. So 50,000 is the goal for 2022. So it's starting this year, but it's going to ramp up over the next 4 years. With a focus on low-income housing first. And those people are the ones that are most affected by the crazy electricity rates in Australia right now. So the fact that that's going to be replaced by their own power generated from their homes going to have a major impact on them. So I think that's just a very smart move from the solar, because the project was initiated by the South Australian government. They sent out a bid for just energy storage system across the state. And Tesla proposed that distributed system with the power walls instead of another huge battery like they did the last time. And the government went with them. Just a great idea, like overall.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a model for the rest of the world.
Yeah. So, of course, it can be replicated like that exactly everywhere. So, right now, it's financially viable in Australia because of their crazy prices. But the similar system are going up. Like in Germany, you have Sonnen batteries that are doing a similar project in Germany through their current network. So it's maybe not like a one-time deployment like Tesla is doing what was announced today, but still a notable effort for them. What else? We had this week, maybe we can move on from Tesla news. Oh, we're going to have a segue news between Tesla news and non-Tesla news by talking about the Polestar 2. You remember the Polestar 2 set?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a disappointing news for me because I was very excited with when Volvo... when Volvo announced that Polestar will become its own brand and it will be fully electric. So that first came out last year. Then Polestar did its launch by unveiling the Polestar 1, which turned out not to be electric, to be a plug-in hybrid instead of a all-electric vehicle. But at the same time, they said, "Oh, by the way, that first car is a plug-in hybrid, but we assure you, all our next cars will be all-electric." So the Polestar 1 was like just kind of a awkward start for them, and it's like a crazy expensive vehicle too. Not really sure what the market is for it, but the most interesting part of that unveiling is that they said the Polestar 2, which would be the first all electric vehicle of the brand and from Volvo as a whole too, will be a Tesla Model 3 competitor. And for those of you who don't know, it's very rare for an automaker to just mention another company by name, like in advertising and press release and press media material content and stuff. They just don't do that. And they said,
"Yeah, you've kind of already lost when you're mentioning a competitor."
Exactly. And now the only thing that they mention about the car basically is that it's going to be a Tesla Model 3 competitor. That's the main thing we know about the car, because they didn't unveil anything else. They unveiled the Polestar 1, which is not a Tesla Model 3 competitor at all. But what happened over the last few weeks is that we Polestar CEO Thomas Hingelat, who's also the chief designer of Volvo, he started releasing more information about his new brand that he's leading. And first of all, the first thing that we learned that was disappointing is that they are aiming only for 50,000 units by 2023. And that's between all three of the models that they plan to have by that time. So it's not there's nothing mass market about that. Like each model is going to have a few tens of thousands of car. There are two models going to have a few tens of thousands of cars, and the Polestar 1 is only planning 500 per year. So that's nothing. So that was the first thing was the winning. So it's not really a Model 3 competitor if you're not planning to do just like one tenth of the Model 3 production. But this week, he just pretty much came out and said Polestar 2 is not going to be a Tesla killer. And that's his words. Because it's going to start at 40,000 euros. So that's $49,000 US. That's the equivalent for 9,000 US.
That's how much a Tesla Model 3 costs at the moment.
Yeah. So that's what I mentioned in the article too. Like, to be fair, like it's not like Tesla is not selling the Model 3 at $35,000 now. But by that time that car comes out,
right,
we're going to assume that it does. So that's really not a competitor right now. And at the same time, too, they pushed the production, because at first they announced that they're going to start producing the car in 2019, which put it close to Model 3, or at least the $35,000 Model 3. But now they're saying that it's going to start in 2020 and they're going to build a car next year. So really disappointing for Polestar 2. Still a nice effort. I'm sure the car is going to be gorgeous. Like Volvo does great car. Especially the interiors are awesome. Very safe vehicles too. But I'm more disappointed in the fact that they just teased us with, we're going to have a great Volvo made Model 3 competitors, and now it's going to be just a Chinese made $50,000 car that they're going to produce 10,000 of them per year.
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind. Like, why even bring it up? Like, why even build it?
Well, maybe not build it, but why bring it up? That's a good point, because now that's all we're going to think. So you made the comparison yourself. So now we're going to have to compare the car to the Model 3. And if the Model 3 at that point is $15,000 cheaper and ends up being comparative in terms of specs, then that car is going to be useless if they do that. So that's what I wrote in their article too. They need to dissociate themselves from that mistake that they did at the first place to try to position it as a Model 3 competitor and then just make it its own car and forget about the Model 3 comparison. Otherwise, it's just not going to be great. What else?
So we haven't talked about the Ionity charging network, which looks pretty promising. Mm-hmm. Although in the U.S. it's called Electrify America.
Well, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah, Electrify America is really just the it's the VW effort. It's the Volkswagen effort that came out of their settlement for for the Dieselgate standard. While Ionity is to a degree, you can say it's part of that too. It's part of as VW's mea culpa, if you will. But it's also a separate effort from BMW, Daimler, Ford, and others. So it's really not at the same level. But the news this week. So we talked about Ionity a bunch of time before. But the news this week is that Audi released a map of the plain station in Europe. So if you go to Electrek and you tap Ionity, you're gonna see the map. 400 stations, so that's not new, 400 stations, but now we get a good look at them, and it covers Europe pretty thoroughly, from Portugal to Norway, from Ireland to Italy, and it goes a little bit further east than Tesla Supercharger network right now.
Yeah, looks like it goes almost to St. Petersburg up there.
Yeah,
not quite.
Not quite Russia, but pretty close to it. So everything west to Russia, it's pretty much covered. It's sticking to the highways, so that's a system to enable long distance travels. Mm-hmm. It also confirmed as six charge point per station, so that's 400 station times six charge point per station. It's not that impressive. Like we know Tesla right now is focusing on 10 and up, so we see a lot of 12, 16, 20 charge point per station. I think that's the future. I think, but
compared to what's out there right now, this is very nice. Also, 150 kilowatt,
250.
Starting at 150 kilowatt and then going up to 350.
Yeah,
at some point in the future.
And the other exciting thing too is that Ionity is going to have a lot of competition too at this point. So we already reported on the Ultra E system, then the Mega E system network. So that's two other network of ultra fast charging station that are going to be in competition to Ionity. And again, today we learned of a new one that was actually announced in December, but it went completely under our radar and most people's radar. I didn't see any news article about it, but it came out today because Renault announced that they're joining the network, and that's another one. Though that's the smallest of all the, because we're talking about four ultra fast charging network right now in Europe. The new one announced today is only 14 stations, so it's not comparable to this one. But the two big ones are going to be Ionity and Mega E. Those are the big network that are going to dominate charging infrastructure in Europe, along with the supercharger network, of course. But supercharger network though doesn't have the 350 yet.
Why do you think why do you think these networks are catching on in Europe much better than they are here in North America?
Regulations.
Yeah, it seems like it's the government's quite a bit more behind these endeavors in Europe.
Yeah, well, they want to catch up with the emission regulation in Europe that are coming, especially starting in 2020. That's what's driving the electric vehicles production. So the automakers in Europe are focusing on delivering their EVs that are coming in 2019, 2020 in Europe first before they reach the US. So the next thing that follows, of course, is the charging infrastructure. So that's what we're seeing right now. And that's why you have many automakers backing it, especially Europe-based automakers, so Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, BMW, Mini, Daimler. Those are all European automakers. They're just Ford that pop up there for some reason. Maybe they're planning like a European push. But Ford's right now, what they announced a bunch of EVs coming in, but closer to 2022. And 2020, like the others, and I don't mean 2022. But in China, too, they have a big push in China for Ford, which is, again, right, because of regulations.
Right.
So if it wasn't for the Dieselgate settlement, and that resulted in Electrify America, the big network that's coming in the U.S., I'm not sure we would have anything similar in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, I mean, so... New York's got kind of a thing going on, mm-hmm. On the interstates. They have this partnership with Green Lots, and I think that partnership's going to be part of Electrify America as well.
Yeah, that's right. But Green Lots going to manage Electrify America too.
And they do a pretty good job. I've stopped at one a few times. They have one CHAdeMO, one CCS combo per rest stop on both sides of the road. So, you know, I don't know. It's not amazing, but like, you know, there's not a lot of people using them as well. So, you know, you can go anywhere in New York, and pretty soon anywhere in the US, 50 kilowatt, not super fast, but, you know, it's there. You can do it. I mean, you know, right now today you can't drive a Chevy Bolt, from Los Angeles to Phoenix, without, you know, stopping at a campground overnight or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an improvement.
Because we reported yesterday on like ChargePoint's network. They released a report on how it grew, how the network grew in 2017. But the thing is with those third-party networks, they're still too focused on level two. ChargePoint has this new fast charging technology that they opened last year. But the deployment, as far as I can tell, is not significant yet. So those guys need really to focus on the fast charging more and have a network competitive with Electrify America's network, which is going to be open anyway, so everyone's going to be able to use it. But, yeah, there's so much room for just growing charging infrastructure in the U.S. It's incredible.
Yeah, and a lot of the problems are with the electric companies or the power companies charging really incredibly high rates for
peak demand
usage. Peak usage. So, you know, batteries are one way to offset that. Another way is getting you know, governments to kind of say you can't, you know, overcharge or whatever. But you know, I think education is probably the biggest problem right now. I was just talking to a group in Ohio that's trying to roll out EV charging, and you know, they're talking about level twos at rest stops in Ohio, and I'm like, you guys, think about this for a minute. Like, you're driving your EV, you know, even in a Chevy Volt or a Chevy Bolt or whatever, you know, whatever, and you stop at a rest stop, you're gonna have to be there for like 6 hours to get any meaningful amount of electricity.
Yeah,
like nobody's going to do that. Like nobody's going to use that thing. And then even worse, the naysayers are going to say, "Look at this. Mm-hmm. We put in a power, you know, an EV charger, and nobody's using it. So the EV chargers are stupid, and we're not going to do any more of them."
Yeah.
Like it's so frustrating that this happens, but you know, government officials aren't educated, and they don't know the difference between a level one, level two, and level three, and you know, the compatibility standards and, you know, the placement.
Yeah. So you don't want to stay hours at a rest stop. You should always think to yourself, like, if depending on where you want to install that that charging station, how much, what's the normal time I want to spend? So if it's a restaurant, yeah, you can maybe at a fast charging station, you want to stay like an hour or less, or you can go with a level two, since normally like it's not, it's a destination instead of a waypoint. But yeah, a truck stop, rest stop, those are waypoint. They're not final destination. It's not an hotel. You want to install something in an hotel? Then yeah, we'll go level 2. Makes sense. So you're gonna stay at a hotel for hours, for days, maybe
overnight.
Yeah, you stay overnight. So go ahead, install level 2, no problem. In garage downtown or something like that, it makes sense to have a level 2. But if it's something that is just a waypoint to go someplace else,
yeah, restaurants, no. Amusement parks, maybe.
Yeah, you can stay a few hours there.
You know, but it, for me, it's just crazy that they're even considering putting a level 2 anywhere that's not, like, on a road, you know, like, just between points. It's insane.
Yeah.
I would say put a level 3 anywhere, everywhere. Like, but, you know,
instead, like, hotels, more workplaces, like, if you have workplace charging and hotels and right. stuff like that, then it makes sense.
Workplaces, hotels, home, obviously. What else makes sense? What places do a level 2 make sense? You know, restaurants definitely don't make sense. You're there for an hour. You're gonna get,
yeah, you know, but 30 there are also some places like you just want to top off. Maybe you just want at a restaurant, unless it's a restaurant at the truck stop or like in middle of between highways, between on a popular route, maybe.
Yeah.
But if it's a restaurant downtown or something like that, well, normally you won't even have parking. But
right.
If you have parking, then it's probably just you don't drive down 2 hours to go to a restaurant downtown or something like that. You just, you're someone local and you're driving maybe like 30 minutes or something, and you can sit your car there and it can be just a nice amenity for someone to top off your car. But it's not like even, it's not that useful, so it shouldn't be a priority for sure, at least at the minimum.
Right. So, you know, education is obviously a big deal. And, you know, that, I guess that's part of what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, yeah. You wrote a few good articles on that back in the day, I remember.
Yeah.
About where you should put a level 2. Maybe we should revisit that at some point. But, that's pretty much it for the episode, guys. Thanks a lot for watching, and thanks a lot to our Patreon supporters, too. We launched a Patreon last week, and we got some amazing support from you guys. We had close to 200 contributors. We appreciate every one of you guys that contributed. And if you feel like... if you would feel like supporting Electrek, not just the podcast itself, but also the website too, you can head out to patreon.com/Electrek and give a few donations, and it goes a long way with us.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
See you next time.
See you next week.